I'm up on the tight wire.
I'm sitting here in Studio B across from my good friend, Daniel Chacon.
And I'm sitting across from my very good friend, Benjamin Alida Sainz.
And welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire.
We have quite an exciting show for you today. It's kind of a local-based show. We have a local poet, Robin Schofield, who just came out with a new book from Mouthfill Press, and it's called Sunflower Cantos. And she is in the studio with us today, and we're going to talk about her new book and a little bit about the El Paso scene, the poetry scene.
Right.
And it's going to be a great show. And what are we in, week number two this semester? We're in the second week of the semester?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, and so far it's been a great semester.
It's a great semester for me because both of my classes, my graduate class, my graduate seminar, Forms and Techniques of Poetry.
Right.
And my undergraduate class, which is
Foundational Techniques.
Is the first half of the semester is all about poetry. So I am
awesome.
All about poetry. I am just reading poems to teach. And it's fun.
You know, when you stay away from teaching for a while, you know, because we teach, you know, that's our bread and butter. When we stay away from it for a while and then we get back into it again, it just feels so good. It just feels great to be in front of the class. And you're teaching a class with 50 students. Boy, you must be a ham. You must enjoy that, huh?
I do enjoy it. I've always enjoyed teaching. I've been doing it for 20 years, and I have to tell you, it's never gotten old. There's a lot of people who enjoy teaching and a lot of people who don't.
Right.
A lot of writers who don't. They teach in writing programs, and they appreciate their jobs, but they don't love teaching. They may be good at it, but they don't love it. And I hear complaints a lot from writers who say, you know, but the teaching really takes away from my writing. I
right.
have never felt that
right.
way.
Right. But, you know, we are also, I think, very fortunate to work at a research institution. So we are teaching what it is that we're working on. And I've always liked that. I always liked that I could teach the books that I'm interested in at the time. I have one concern this semester, and I know this is going to sound a little narrow in focus, but I've been concerned about my beard.
No, I like it.
No, I'm really concerned about it. You want to know why?
Because it's white.
No, my beard's been white for the last 10 years. I'm very proud of that. What it is that I started to shave it, so I have this goatee and this mustache, but I look like my father, and it's freaking me out. Sometimes I'll look in the mirror, and I'll see my dad, and I'll go, oh, my God, I'm my father. And, you know, my father, you know, was like all human beings had the spirit of God. And so he had some, you know, goodness in him. But, you know, the outer part, the part that we related to every day was really hard to deal with. And so when I see my dad, it's almost like I get angry at myself.
No,
it's weird.
You know,
I don't know what to do.
That's very interesting because I think all of us as we age, sometimes there's a part of us that does look like our father,
yeah.
even if we don't look that much like
right,
him.
Right, right. I look a lot like my father.
And I'm going to tell you something. I look like my mother, but sometimes I look in the mirror and I see my father.
Oh, I've seen pictures of your father. You look nothing like him, but maybe the eyes or something, some part of
him. No, the eyes are my mother's, definitely. But I think it's the mustache thing. You know, it's interesting that you talk about facial hair and fathers, because my father had a mustache. He never shaved it off. He shaved it off from my sister's wedding as a favor to her.
Mm-hmm.
But he always had a mustache and he always looked mad. And all of us swore. I had four other brothers, so all of us swore that we'd never grow mustaches.
And
we
then all have mustaches.
We all have mustaches. It's hilarious.
That's funny. You know, my little brother does a goatee and a mustache, but he doesn't look anything like my father, though. But when I do it, I've had this little thing right here, and I've been asking everybody I see, and I say, well, what do you think? What do you think? Is it me? And most people have been very encouraging, but I just so weird because I look at my face and I see my father and I want to yell at myself. I want to chastise myself for something like he did so often in my life.
Well,
oh boy, we are going deep into my psyche, aren't we? Let's go deeper, Ben.
I know.
Tell me about your father.
I know a good therapist.
good therapy for me is hanging out with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you always tell me what your therapist says.
Well, it's really interesting. I think that one of the things we always grapple with, I mean, one of the things about a writer and whether we like it or not, that writing is always in one way, maybe indirectly, but we're always searching for ourselves.
Right.
And who we are, what life means. And a lot of that is also our personal stories, and some of it's baggage, and some of it is just, you know, we inherit our genes.
Right, right.
We look like a combination of our parents. And so we always grapple with this idea of identity, but it's really maybe a subjectivity. It's always shifting.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm not who I was when I was a young man. I didn't worry about what parent I looked like. But as you grow older, you do think, well, whose son am I anyway?
Right. You know,
am I my mother's son? Am I my father's son? The fact of the matter is we are our father's sons and we are our mother's sons as well.
You know, I was reading this interview in Le Monde with Borges in one of their literary sections, and he said, "Savant l'enfant qui sait qui est son père." And it's always been very important to me. Wise is the child who knows he is his father, not who is like his father, but knows he is his father. And I think that's one of the things that I have to acknowledge in my life. I am my father. I am him. I have his characteristics. And the more I recognize that I am him, not like him, but that I am him, the more I can, I guess, embrace those parts of him that were beautiful and try to stay away from those parts of him that weren't so beautiful.
Well, you're a wiser man than me.
No, it was Borges that's wise. I'm just a vessel. Okay, we'll be right back with Robin Schofield. Robin Schofield is a native of Austin, Texas. She began writing poetry at the age of 7. She graduated from the University of Texas at Austin with a BA in English and an MA in creative writing, where she was active in the spoken word scene. She has been living in El Paso for the past 20 years. Her poetry has been published in the Paris Review, Western Humanities Review, the Texas Observer, Unlikely Stories, Border Senses, and many, many more. She writes regularly with the Tumble Words Project right here in El Paso, Texas. And we are going to talk about her new book from Mouthfill Press, Sunflower Cantos. Robin Schofield, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you.
What a beautiful book, Sunflower Cantos. Tell us about this book.
Well, this is my first published collection. It took a lot longer to get published than it did to write, because I wrote the majority of it in 2001.
Wow. It's a tough market, isn't it?
Yes, it is, for poetry.
Weren't you discouraged between, you know, in, what's that, 12 years?
Yes, I was, and particularly I was discouraged because I thought it was very good, and I would send the poems out to various venues, mm-hmm. from Border Senses to The New Yorker, and I got very few takers.
Well, you have been published in very good magazines.
Yes,
though.
I
you
have.
You were in the Paris Review, I believe.
Yes. That'll be out in my next book.
Yeah. And how is it that you didn't, that you just kind of persevered through all of these years of having this collection? And, or did you have the collection, or did you just have the poems? Or
I had the collection. I had it put together,
wow.
Pretty much.
And you just kept sending it out and sending it out.
Yes.
What did that feel like?
Well, I had confidence in the book. I knew I had something good. I felt like it would find a place someday.
Well, you know, we always hear these stories from great writers who are talking about how they sent out their novel or their book and it was rejected 70 times and then finally it found the right publisher. Well, congratulations on finding the right publisher.
Thank
how did
you.
It feel?
It felt great.
I've been in El Paso now for, oh, I don't know, 12 years or so, 13 years. I guess 13 years now. And you have always been a very active member of the writing community. You're also involved with a group called Tumble Words. Can you
yes.
talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Tumble Words gets together on every Saturday afternoon, and we do directed free writes at least twice. We have a presenter, and I remember that one time I was driving all the way to Las Cruces for a Tumble Words workshop, and I was thinking on the way, I was thinking very discouraging thoughts about my writing. But at the workshop, we made this little figure out of clay and mm-hmm. feathers and beads and stuff like that. So it was very very tactile workshop, and that's where Cantalily was born.
Oh, yeah. Now that you're talking about Cantalily, Cantalily is one of the personas, or the persona, really, throughout the poems in this book. And tell us about her.
Well, I had been reading some myths of the Iroquois Nation, retold by Joseph Campbell, and I think that mm-hmm. may be the start of it. But, of course, that was a male trickster. As she came, as the poems kept coming, and as she came more into focus, I realized that this was a female trickster, which I don't think there has been one.
And tell me about what side of you is Cantilily.
What side of me?
It's just not something that came from nowhere.
Right, right. Well, she's a trickster deity that doesn't have much power and that gets into some trouble with some other spiritual sources. So I think that describes some part of me.
Are you a deeply spiritual person?
Yes, I think so.
How did you order your poems? Is it in the order that you wrote them?
Or pretty much.
Pretty much, just in the order that you wrote them.
Mm-hmm.
And you just felt that that was right.
It felt right.
So you didn't have any issues once it was finished about changing the order, like a lot of poets, they suffer over. Now I have all these poems. I have to figure out how they hold together. You didn't have any of those issues.
It seemed to me to fit together in a kind of story.
You know, one of the questions I always ask poets is, did they print out all the poems and put them on the floor and look at them and arrange them? But I guess you didn't have to do that.
I didn't. I just put them in the order that I wrote them. Wow. I wrote them by hand in a notebook.
So if I were to try to describe Robin Schofield, the poet, her style, her influences to somebody, what would I say? Who is she like? Who are her influences?
Gosh. I've started with the classic people. William Blake was one of my heroes when I was in college, and now I hope I'm influenced by W.S. Merwin and Naomi Shihab Nye and people like that.
I love W.S. Merwin.
Yeah, isn't he great?
He is great. He's really great. And I love Naomi Nye. She's not only a wonderful poet, she's a wonderful person.
Yes.
I just bought her book, and I'm really looking forward to read it. Selected Poems.
Yes, I think you'll really enjoy it. Who else are some of your literary heroes?
Oh, let's see. My literary heroes, Adrian Rich.
That's a good one to have.
I have a William Blake story.
Oh, yeah?
When I was in college at Fresno State, I was a new poet. I was a new Chicano poet, and I was very Chicano, and I was very much, down for la raza. And I remember one of the first things Chicano poets do, of course, is we start to lament and the lack of Chicanos in the canon. And I remember talking to my poetry teacher, Connie Hales, Corinne Clegg Hales, who we had on the show, wonderful poet. But, here I was on fire, and I was telling her about, I said, why is Blake famous? It's like this crap, the stuff he writes. Come on, Little Lamb, Who Made Thee? What the heck?
Tiger, Burning Bright in the Forest of the Night.
And, I would say, why aren't Chicanos in the canon? But he is. And Connie, she was so sweet. She knew how to handle me. She says, well, it's a little more complex than that. But now I love Blake. I think Blake is fantastic.
Yeah, his longer works.
So how does your spirituality fit in with your language? Do you find sometimes when you're writing that you get into rhythms and incantations that lead you to places that
yes.
maybe you couldn't go otherwise?
Oh yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, it's almost like a trance state, and I think that you can get into it when you're first writing something down or when you're revising, too.
Mm. We're talking to Robin Schofield, author of Sunflower Cantos, published by Mouthfield Press.
And Mouthfield Press is started by Maria Maloney, who's a former student of ours here at the MFA program. We also had, Gabe Gomez on the show, who talked about The Seed Bank, which is also from Mouthfield Press. Tell us about your relationship with the press. Do you like it? Are they doing well for you?
Oh, yes, I think so, yes. First of all, bringing this, they brought a chapbook out, and now they've brought Sunflower Cantos out with a beautiful cover. And,
yeah, it's really nice.
And now they're going to publish a second full-length collection.
Oh, my gosh.
Tell us about that.
That's going to be called Drive, and it's actually, most of the poems in it were written, or some of the poems in it were written after the Sunflower Cantos, but most of the poems were written earlier.
Wow. That's interesting.
That's the way publishing goes sometimes.
And so that's done. Right? Mm-hmm. That book is done. So I assume you haven't stopped writing.
No, I have two more projects, two more poetry books that I'm working on, and I'm working on a novel.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Well, we'll see.
Well, tell us about the novel and how, because I've always known you as a poet, and you didn't know you were interested in writing narrative. How did you get in your psyche, in your head, the need to kind of write a novel?
Well, I just got this idea from those three teenagers in Arkansas that were falsely accused of a murder, and they had to go to jail for it. So that was the original germ of the idea, and I decided to set it in my hometown of Lewisville, Texas, in an earlier time, and it's a murder mystery, as it has some spiritual overtones. One of the small-town pastors gets into trouble and is accused of devil worship, and of course, the wrong guy gets accused of the murders. And
sounds like a movie deal.
That's exciting. And are you far along?
I think I'm about halfway through the first draft.
That's pretty good. You know, the first half's the hardest. It doesn't seem so, but after 150 pages, I can sail through.
Really?
Yeah. It's the first 150 pages is the killer.
Wow.
Okay.
That's usually when I give up, is after 150 pages.
Robin, we always ask our guest on the show, to read a poem or two. And you can talk about the poem and read maybe one or two poems.
Okay, thank you. I'll read The Ballad of Cantalili. It starts the second section of the book, and it came about at a time when I was still trying to figure out who Cantalili was. So it's just called Ballad. White terns cross the cobalt mountains, turned fire in the river. My name is Riddle Speaker, the taste of wings rising. The reflection tastes like mercury, but my teeth are sweet. With faces like catcher's mitts, the old crones look twice. In my hands, I find birds to carry the seed for winter wheat. My name is what the sandpiper says to the river. The wolf moon lights my name, not a snake on the path. My name is not golondrina, not full throttle at dawn. My name is not sopilote, yet I eat the dead. My name is not snow goose, yet I am white-feathered. My name stops before limestone slabs in Smuggler's Gap. My name is a train whistle, the gates coming down.
Nice. That's really lovely. That's really, really lovely.
Thank you.
We have been talking to Robin Schofield, whose new book just came out, Sunflower Cantos, put out by Mouthfeel Press. Pick it up. It's a fantastic book. Thank you so much, Robin. Are you going to be doing any workshops around town?
I am. I'm doing Tumblewords workshops in February, and that's at Memorial Park Library from 12:45 to 2:45.
What days?
Saturdays.
Okay.
Saturdays.
Excellent. And so people can come by, and you're going to run some writing workshops where people are going to write, and they read aloud what they write?
Yes.
Cool.
And does that feed your work?
Yes, it does.
The interaction?
And just the sitting down with other people to write, it's like the difference between writing a paper all by yourself and sitting down in an exam and writing where everybody else is writing. There's just nothing else to do but write and see what comes out.
Who are some of the people that are associated with Tumbleroots?
Well, let's see. Donna Snyder,
of course,
is the founder.
Yeah. She's been around for – she's a literary activist in El Paso.
Yes. Mary Mooney, she was former editor of Border Senses. Gene Keller. And he just had a book come out, too.
Yes, he did.
You all usually show up to that. So if people want to show up, they're going to meet all these writers.
Yes.
Excellent.
That's excellent. That's cool. Excellent. I think that's really important that there's a balance in your work, that you not only have a great love of poetry, but poetry isn't for you. You take it out there, and you take it to the community, and you want it to be of, for, and by the community.
Yes. And, in fact, we're doing some poetry readings in April at the different branches of the library.
Well, perhaps you can send us a schedule and we'll announce it here on Words on a Wire.
Okay.
Absolutely. And any of those writers want to do a segment of Poetic License, you know, that you've heard our segment,
yes,
Poetic License, basically 5 minutes, you read whatever you want, preferably an essay, memoir.
Like a meditation on something or
or an opinion on something.
And
you guys are welcome.
And it doesn't have to be just about writing either.
It could be about anything. It could be about
something very personal.
Gun control.
Or it can be something political.
It could be anything.
Okay.
It's Poetic License.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Robin Schofield, for joining us or Words on the Wire.
Thank you, Danielle and Ben.
For our poetic license today, we have a special call-in visitor, a little mini interview with the incomparable Bobby Bird, publisher of Cinco Puntos Press. How you doing, Bobby?
Very, very good. Very good. Daniel, Ben, ¿cómo están?
I'm good. I'm good, Bobby Bird. Good to have you on the show.
So, Bobby, I hear that you have some really excellent, excellent news that you wanted to share with our listeners.
You know, this is a great day. This is Ben's book, Dante and Aristotle Discover the Secrets of the Universe.
Which just came out.
Yeah. Well, it won the sweepstakes at the American Library Association, which is a very, very huge thing. It received, first off, the Pulitzer Belpre Award, the award for the best Latino book for young people by a Latino.
Wow. Ben, that's awesome. Yeah, that is so awesome.
I'm getting embarrassed here.
We're just getting started, Daniel. The second one was the Stonewall Award, and this is given by the GLBT, the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transsexual Roundtable. And that is also for the Young Youth Award, the Young Adult Award.
So it got two awards in one day?
Third? It was the book received an honor book from the Prince Award Committee.
Oh,
now, the Prince Award, you know, I've been thinking about this for a long time. The Prince is like the top award for young adult fiction. It's like the meta. And being an honor book on that is just incredible. Several librarians came by after all these awards were announced to talk to Cinco Puntos. Because, as you know, the Dante and Aristotle was published by Simon & Schuster.
Right.
But two of Ben's early first YA novels were published by Cinco Puntos.
Last Night I Sang to the Monster and Sammy and Juliana in Hollywood, right?
Right, exactly. And several librarians who were what we call loudmouths, they speak up in the library community. And they said they were very surprised because Ben's books are always on the edge in a lot of ways.
Right. He doesn't shy away from things that hurt.
Right. This book is about two boys in high school who fall in love. It was a book that 5 years ago nobody would have looked at it. They would have read it and praised it, but they wouldn't have considered it for this award.
This is Ben's first book about a love between two boys. His very first book that even goes into this genre, and he's sweeping up all those awards. That is amazing.
Right. It's quite an amazing thing. But besides the fact that it's a wonderful celebration of Ben and his work, it also speaks a lot, I think, about a sea change in the way people are looking at young adult fiction and the way that our culture looks at this issue, you know, this issue of love between two boys. You know, so this committee is sort of like the gatekeeper. Before, Ben's book might have won the Pulitzer Belt, and it certainly would have won the Stonewall Award. But for then to be listed on the Prince Committee speaks volumes about where we are as intellectual and cultural and heartfelt country. It really does. So I'm real, real delighted for Ben. You know, it's important for Cinco Puntos because Cinco Puntos is, as you know, we publish a lot of Ben's books.
Right.
It's important for our family because Susie Bird's name is mentioned in the book.
That's right. It's true. If you can, put this prize in context for us. What does it mean in terms of Ben's book sales and the book itself and Ben? And
Ben's two books with Cinco Puntos, both were on the top 10, on the best books of the year awards for the ALA. And we sold, probably because of that, we sold 10,000.
Wow.
Because what happens is that people, they're jobbers who just buy the list. And they sell the list, and so there are a lot of librarians that just sign up for the list every year, you know. So these books will be going to communities all over the country. Libraries are still the place of refuge for so many people, young people especially, who are dealing with the same issues in their lives that Ben talks about in his books. It's incredibly important for the Chicano community. It's incredible for the GLBT community, but it's also it's very, very important for our culture. Because these librarians, you know, they're tough. They're very responsible. They get in there and they piss and fight and argue and kick. And it's, you know, it's a hard emotional thing. They're very serious about what they do. They know that they're speaking to everybody. They know that they have a responsibility to make this the best, these books, whatever committee it is, they speak the best for that year. And so they really go in there and fight. So for Dante and Aristotle to have done so well, it's just wonderful.
We're talking to Bobby Bird, and he just told us that Ben's newest novel, Dante and Aristotle, Discover the Secrets of the Universe, has won 3 prizes in one day. And this is really big news for all of us here at Words on the Wire, here at UTEP, and just for literature in general. And listeners, I wish you could see Ben right now. He's just sitting there looking so humble.
Ben called me first thing in the morning when he had heard the news. He had heard about the Put a Bell Prey the night before, but then we heard about these other two things. He called me, and he was weeping. This whole thing with the prince is what will probably get the most attention.
Right.
But I think he was most touched by the fact that the GLBT Roundtable gave him the Stonewall Award. These are the places that Ben has, as we know, in the Chicano community already, but the GLBT community, this is where he has thrown his hat. And this is what he wants to write about. This is how he wants to express. His books are always about himself in a way, not autobiographical,
right, right.
But they're dealing with what he believes in intensely. And so the Stonewall Award, I think, was the one that he was really deeply touched about. Ben Hameen, I love you very much, and congratulations.
I love you too, Bobby Bird.
Wow, what a show that was. Thank you, Robin Schofield. It was great having you in the studio. And thank you, Bobby Bird, for sharing such great news with us. Congratulations, Ben. We are so proud of you.
Thank you so much.
You deserve it. You write and you write and you write and you write more than anybody I know. You deserve it. Join us next week when we have poet Matthew Dickman, and we'll be talking about his new book, Mayakovsky's Revolver.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Words on a Wire.
I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Benjamin Alida Sainz.
And don't forget, the next book Ben writes may save all our lives.
I'm up on a tight wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game with you and me. I'm up on a tightrope. One side's hate and one is hope. But the top hat on my head is all you see. And the wire seems to be the only place for me. A comedy, a railroad.